I'm Ed.
Hello, I'm Sean.
And I'm Chris.
And welcome to the Lack of Focus podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to another episode of Lack of Focus. I am your host, Ed Horn, and alongside me tonight, my good friend, Mr. Sean Dorsey. Sean, how's it going, my friend?
Well, not too bad, Ed. How you doing?
I'm good. And, of course, our producer extraordinaire one, Mr. Sheriff Chris. How's it going, my friend?
Good, thanks, Ed.
Good. And tonight's main topic is going to be IP spinoff games, some of your favorites. It's going to be an interesting topic that Sean has brought to the table. But, of course, let's address the elephant in the room for a little bit. We have missed a show, which is normal for us. This time, Sean can't even take the blame. This one's completely on me. Our last recording day that we were scheduled, I came down with, I don't know what, it was not COVID.
We pushed the Thursday to the Sunday.
Correct. Okay, so both instances are my fault, which is why I'm claiming full responsibility for this one. One, I had a work thing that came up on a Thursday night, as for whatever reason, they want to do server pushes and updates on Thursday nights. I begged for this not to happen, but alas, that's what happened. So I had to push that Thursday night. And then I went to the fish store on Saturday. I got 3/4 of the way through my shift and I was not feeling 100%. So I went home early. And then I was just kind of like, ugh, by the time I got home. So we made the call to just kind of push that one. So I do apologize. I will take ownership of that one. Sean doesn't get to take that one. So we're going to try to make it up to you for the mission.
Well, I know me and Sean could have recorded without you, but we decided to watch the Super Bowl instead. So,
I did kind of watch that, but I was kind of on NyQuil at that point in time. I heard the Chiefs won again.
To be honest, I didn't even watch it. Jill watched the Super Bowl and saw the halftime show. I saw none of it. I don't know.
I didn't either. I was doing other things.
Yeah, well, I did watch after the fact, and then of course, surprise, surprise! Oh, it's late in the game. And somehow the Chiefs magically score a touchdown to win a game. It's the same script they've been running for year after year. But at least Taylor Swift won her first Super Bowl, so at least we can all be happy with that. Anyway. Yep.
I was happy for her.
So was I. I mean, she worked so hard. She's totally teasing. I brought a lot of people, a lot of fans. Okay, fine, blah. Anyway, so the non-sportsy stuff. What have you guys been doing lately? Sean, I'm going to start with you. I haven't talked to you in almost a month. What have you been up to lately?
Pinball.
Pinball's a good answer.
Yep.
So I got saw your 4K one.
Yep. So I got the 4K pinball, and so been playing on that. There were a few issues at launch with it, which to be expected. It's a new piece of equipment, new hardware. So they're trying to get everything up to speed on it, which I'm patient. Not everybody, you know. We live in a world of impatience, so.
When you say issues, are you talking like software issues, not like mechanical hardware?
Yeah, I mean it's software issues, but
okay.
But they're, you know, you're looking at it's a digital pinball machine that has some mechanical parts. So it has solenoids and things that, you know, make noise and stuff like that. But part of the problem was, and it was only in actually one game, which. It's the At Games, what the heck is it called? Adam's Family Table, sorry. And it's...
So just the one everybody wants to play, then.
Well, it's what
but
they call
I know
their...
nothing about pinball, and I know that the Adam's Family one is a really high-quality machine.
Yes, yeah, it's actually a really high-quality table. It's one of the most popular tables ever made. And it's digitally produced by a company called Zen Studio. So if you play pinball, Steam has Pinball FX and Pinball FX3 and Pinball FXM or M, something like that. But they're all done by Zen Studios. So if you want to see the types of tables, and like Ed has seen the Star Wars table, which was made by Zen Studios and Arcade 1UP, It's definitely I would call it as close to recreation as you can make digitally. There are some concessions that they have to make depending upon, you know, whoever owns the IP and, you know, like the actors and things like that. The table is the Raul Julia version. So it's the newer movie version. of it. And so there are some differences between what would be the actual table and even the Zen Studios table on Pinball FX or FX3. So like there's an electric chair where Uncle Fester sits normally in the FX3 and
Christopher Lloyd, Uncle Fester, to be clear.
Yeah. So they have that in the other two versions, but in this one they don't. And it's probably because Christopher Lloyd or whoever the IP owner was probably negotiated that separately and wouldn't allow it. And At Games probably didn't want to pay for it, you know. So there are going to be some pinball concessions. They've announced, so this is the standard edition. So if you were to want to buy a pinball table or a pinball machine, they have two standard. This is the only one out right now. They have one that's called Dinosaur Dynasty, which is a Magic Pixel four game table that has a dinosaur, a planet, an Amazonian. I can't remember the other one. They actually come free, or not free, but with this table. And then they're going to have the Star Trek. A Star Trek table has been announced, which is the newer movie table. So it's the Kelvin universe. And then they have a Snoopy table that's been announced too. Those are collector's edition tables, where this is the standard edition. There's really no difference between them. The difference is they're going to make as many of these tables for the end, till the end of time, or till they go out of business, one of the two. Same with the Dinosaur Dynasty when it releases. But the collector's tables, they're only producing 5,000 of each one. Now, with that said, that's a lot of tables, and they're going to produce 15 Zen themed tables. So you could get like another Star Trek, you could get the Next Generation, you could get the Star Wars themed, but all it is the table. It's not, you know, you're still getting basically the same games I got on this, except you'll get the themed tables, like the Snoopy table on the Snoopy one. So there are differences. There's going to be variances, but they're basically the same table. And then with this one, they came out with a surround sound FX kit. So it was not cheap. But I got it for half price because I bought it or pre-ordered it on day one. So I got it for $200 instead of $400. But it's basically what it does is it adds an amplifier in the system. It adds a subwoofer that's on the bottom, and then it adds four speakers for the sound effects of the table. So you just don't have the back speakers and then the solenoids and stuff firing. You get all the sound. So with this, it sounds like the ball rolling over a table, like the, you know, the wood on a real pinball table. So it adds a lot to it. One of the other things about this that the complaints are, which I understand, but I don't give a crap myself, is it's a 4K monitor, which is actually a good monitor. And then but it's only at 60 hertz. So they're not doing the 120.
Oh, I was wondering how they were going to handle that 4K.
So, well, you're doing the higher end Rock chip processor. So it can only go so high. It's not like a video card. You still have limitations within the system. So the 60 hertz, but the ball still looks like it's rolling, you know. Right. And that's the main thing out of the 60 or 140 or whatever, or 120, is the only animation that is absolutely moving continuously is the ball. And when I look at the table, the ball moves. But what the problem, trying to get back on my train of thought at the beginning, was the problem that they had is there's flipper lag on the Adams family. So, but I think a lot of it, I think, is more psychological than anything else. And the reason why I say that is when you push the flippers in, it fires solenoids, so it sounds like flippers hitting. And actually, when you play real pinball, a lot of times the flipper sound is solenoids. So it's very similar to a regular table. But on digital, you would push them in, the solenoids would fire, and then the flippers would go. But To me, that's more psychological, because if you just turn the solenoids off and you push the buttons, you're not getting that misfire between a sound and an action. You would just get the timing down on the action. So, but they're still working on that. That's something that to fix, and it'll get fixed over time. You know, Zen Studios will fix it, and there won't be, it'll get fixed with a BIOS update, and then there won't be anything right. else.
That's why I asked if it was a software thing, because yeah, I know it does stink to have that happen on release. I hate to say it, but we're in an era where things don't normally ship. The version 1.0 of things that ship isn't always in the best states, and there are going to be patches. There's going to be updates that are going to bring it up to where it's supposed to be. I mean, I thought people were used to that. But
well, that's kind of the way video games are, you know.
That's exactly how video games are now.
You know, where you're patching three patches in to fix problems and stuff. And all the other games that came with it really didn't have that problem. Just the Addams Family. But that's also a heavier use table. You know, there's a lot of things going on. The other thing that's nice about the Zen tables, if you like this stuff, I don't care for it, but if you like it, you get other special effects that come with them. So, like scores, if you hit bumpers and stuff like that, you'll see the amount of points you're getting will pop up on the screen and will, like, roll up off that bumper that you're hitting and stuff. So, that's pretty cool, if you like that. And then the other thing that they have is when you release the ball, you pull the plunger back, it has Uncle Fester's golf club, and he hits the ball into the field rather than the plunger shooting the ball around the plunger lane and stuff. So
that's,
but the other thing about these machines and why I think that it's worth the money is that if I don't want to buy the games on the machine itself, I can actually play the games that are on Pinball FX and Pinball FXM, or Pinball M, or whatever they're calling it. Pinball M is the mature tables. So it's the heavier content things, like the Thing Pinball.
The more horror stuff.
Yeah.
Some of the other more...
The gory spicy, or...
The spicy. You
know, yeah, Chucky. There's a Chucky table on there. There's other tables, and I don't remember them all, but I own them all, but I don't remember them all because I haven't played them yet. I pretty much bought them all because I knew I was getting this. So basically, you run three HDMI cables off your video card to the machine, and then you set it up, and it works just like your, it's a pinball table native on the machine. So,
okay.
Yeah. So, you know, that to me is pretty cool. With this. So that's kind of what I've been doing for the last month is, you know,
that's enough. It really is.
And the one thing that I realize is that I suck pretty bad at pinball, you know, so there's,
you're going to get better
that goes with it. Oh yeah. Well, and what I never really fully ever 100% realized is that pinball, oddly enough, the tables have like stories in them. You know, it's not just hitting the ball and trying to score as many points. There's like a lot of tables out there. Stern tables have a lot of it too, where you're trying to level things, you know. So like the Stern, what is it, Venom table, you fight bosses and then you unlock other bosses and the story progresses as you play more and things like that. So Addams Family, similar, not that it has bosses and stuff, but if you're good enough, the table, you know, will progress in storyline, which then you score more points and do more things. And the thing about that table is that's a brutal table. So if I were actually putting quarters in that thing, I'd be out of money really quick, you know, because it's 50 cents a play on a normal table. And it has a wide gap drain line down the middle.
Ugh.
And it's a difficult table the real table has magnets in it, and in the digital game they're simulated. You know, you can see when the magnet gets the ball and puts it on a line in the game. Most of the time it doesn't drain with a magnet, but sometimes it will. It'll be frustrating. But it's one of those games where, you know, you really get good at it, and you can have a ton of fun with it, you know, just a blast. So the other thing is with this ecosystem, with this table, is that Zen is going to release tables that are native within the system too. And they'll be the similar or same tables that you're getting off the Zen Pinball on Steam. So if you want to buy the packs, you buy the packs, you download them, and then they're on your machine, you know, either forever until the license is pulled, one of the two, you know, because digital software, now you have to worry about licensing now.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so that's been the majority of it. I did get my Aerodrome, so I opened it and I kind of sorted it out. So I'll be, not this weekend, but probably next weekend, looking into figuring out how to play Aerodrome. And then I have 2.5 Astra Militarum models built, out of 10, but the other 7 of them have been sitting in the same state all week because I haven't had time to sit down and do them. So yep. I'm probably going to bring a small Astra Militarum army with me, and that'll be it. So we'll play just a small versions of it when we're in Chicago.
Yeah, no, we'll do small ones. That's,
you know, I don't know how many points yet, but I bought the cards, so I have the cards, and I we'll just have to figure out points and stuff. I don't think it's going to matter too much, but
neither do I. And like I said, Gabe and I can balance our stuff against whatever you decide to bring, and we can kind of work it out.
Yeah, I'll probably have some shock troops, one or two Lehman Russes. I have
a good start.
Yeah, a Sentinel maybe. You know, so
Sentinels are pretty good. They light other targets up for you, make it easier to shoot them.
Yep. So we'll see what I have available and ready to go. It just depends on how much time I have to build stuff. So, but I'm looking forward to it and trying to figure out where one of my models went. It's probably on the floor somewhere.
Well, we are less than a month away from traversing our ways to Chicago. Chris, if you don't mind, usually since you're going to carry the show anyway, and I know you're going to carry the show, I'll squeeze in my little bits that I've been up to lately, just really quick, to kind of camp onto where Sean's at. For starters, the league's been going fantastically. Our league is up to 20 players playing 40K on Tuesday nights. Our store is about to do some remodeling, and I'm looking forward to the final product, basically. Long story short, the building that they're in used to be one of those rental stores. Like, if you wanted to go and rented a couch or rented a TV or rented a vacuum cleaner for, like, a couple of weeks or something like that, they used to be called rent-a-centers. I don't know if they have the similar something in the UK or Canada. Chris, I don't know if they have those kind of things up there. They're kind of common around here. So the way that the layout is, you have this big open area where we are, where they've got, like, all the comics and the Funko Pops and the Legos and all this other stuff. And then you've basically got, like, a very small area, almost, basically, I don't know, 25, 30 feet where the tables are for gaming, and it's not sufficient. So what they've got enough in the area in the back, but they have these weird walls built that they're non-load-bearing. So the store is elected to just blow all those walls out and just make it a big open store, which should give us a good 120 by 60-foot square area of just gaming tables. Which is going to be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to doing what it's going to look like at the end. They asked the 40K players to take all the terrain home and bring it back with them every week. So currently right now in the trunk of my car are 3 boxes of terrain. Because what they said is, like, so you guys can either take the terrain home, or when we start blowing the walls out, we're just going to throw everything away. And the 40K players are like, nope, can't have that happen. So we all took boxes home. We've all been bringing boxes to the store the last couple of weeks. But we've got one more week of league left before construction starts. The upside is the league is going to end the Tuesday before the Saturday they start doing construction. So it'll work out great. So we'll have like 3 weeks that we're going to have kind of just open gaming, whatever we can squeeze in, we'll squeeze in. And then hopefully by the end of that, and we get back from Chicago, construction will be done and we can get back. That'll be fun. It's nice to see. We've got so many new players, so many people who just went out and bought themselves a combat patrol. We've got our father and son team that kind of came in and starting to learn how to play 40K. They've been up there a couple of weeks back to back. I've been coaching more games than I can shake a stick at recently, which basically consists of me standing over a table, kind of giving out ideas and strategies, making sure they're learning the rules. I've been doing a lot of that, but I'm beginning to see the benefits. I've heard multiple people say, oh, if you want to learn how to do this game, go talk to Ed. He'll set up a coaching game for you. It was the best thing that could ever happen to me because just reading the rules at home didn't help. But having him just coach one game for me made the game make all the sense in the world to me. Now I understand it. So that's kind of what you want to do when you're trying to lead a community and trying to help guide all those new players in, is to help give them a solid sense of the rules and that they have a feeling that they know what they're doing. So that's been beneficial. We've been having a good time. I do have things on my painting table that I need to finish up. My 1500 point army, if I rent right now, I could probably go right now and it'd be fine to go to Adepticon. There's a couple of things I need to touch up. I went out and got some 3D printed bases for my Pensha. The folks at Adepticon said as long as they are on the base that they need to be, they're fine, which is great. So that means I don't have to go out and paint a 10-girl squad over Pensha before Adepticon. I do have some weapon swaps I want to do. I have like two multi-melter girls and two melter girls upstairs that I need to paint so that they can actually fit in my squads the way that they're supposed to. So that I have the right weapons and everything is WYSIWYG for that. And then I snapped the arm off of one of my warsuits, the Paragon warsuits, and I gave her a mace. So I need to paint that. But after that, like, I don't have a ton to paint, but I'm starting to feel the crunch. So I went like, I'm like, oh, I've got a month to go. I know how long it's going to take to squeeze in those couple of hours a night to get them done. And I need to start now, because if I don't start now, I'm going to drive out to Chicago and I'm going to be painting my ass off the day before the event and hoping to have everything done and painted. And that's not a comfortable feeling. I want to go there and relax. And that's not what I want to do. And then by the time you guys hear this, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth should be coming out on Thursday the 29th. So I'm going through one quick playthrough again of Final Fantasy VII Remake to kind of refresh where I was and where the game went. I'm almost done with it, and that's one of the other things. I need to finish it so that I can go and paint. So give me that time in between, because once I start Rebirth, I'm afraid that's going to take over my hobby time, and I can't let it as much as I want it to. But yeah, no, that's kind of about it. I've been working at the fish store. Yeah, you guys kind of missed a little bit of the pregame conversations. The fish store has been kind of fun. It's that kind of counts as a hobby and stuff that I've been doing. I'm apparently really good at selling fish. I've apparently hit number one or number two salesperson each of the days that I've been there. So apparently that's pretty good. Like, so much so, like, my boss, like, even texted me. He's like, I'm really surprised. Like, cause a whole bunch of newbies, we all came in all at the same time. And I'm up there with like a lot of the experienced ones for how much I'm pulling in sales. So apparently I'm really good at selling fish. And I get to tell one of my favorite jokes of all time, all the time. Because people ask about red cherry shrimp all the time. I'm like, oh, what kind of fish can I put those in? And here's the joke. I will tell everyone the same joke at the same time. Well, you kind of have to be careful what fish you put in with these, because I don't know from personal experience, but Neocaridina shrimp are apparently delicious. So every fish that you put, see, Sean laughed, he gets it, because you got to be careful with going in, because otherwise you're just going to get eaten. That's the joke, but I love that joke, and some people laugh, some people don't. The ones that laugh, I'm like, yep, nope, I got you, I'm good.
So yeah. To not turn this into a fish show, but I have three American flag fish in my tank. It's a 20-gallon tank with my cardinals and my Amano shrimp, and the other day when the light came on, I saw one of the flagfish just chomping down on the remains of a cherry shrimp. And I'm like, good for you, because there's like 50 cherry shrimp in my tank now.
Ooh, so you're doing pretty well in your breeding then.
Yeah, I mean, it's designed for them. And, you know, the flagfish come out every once in a while.
Yeah, good. Yeah, no, my tank's doing really, really well. Like I said, I added... Maybe I'll help them out. Maybe I won't. The fish store that I work at on Saturdays has an Instagram account. My oldest daughter follows them on Instagram. And 2 weeks ago or a week ago, they posted pea puffer fish, which for those who do not know, are the only freshwater puffer fish. They're really, really tiny. They only get to be about an inch long total in their entire lifespan. They are carnivores. They're not your average fish. You have to be careful with what you put them in. But she messaged me on my way to work and said, oh my god, they've got pea puffers, please let me know if I can have one. And of course we had one left at the end of my day, and I said, okay, fine. And I've been asking a bit about it from the experts that are there. She's great. She's been there for a week. She's not eaten any of my shrimp yet. I went out and had to go and get a whole bunch of nuisance ram's horn snails. Basically, these are the asexual variety that you basically put them in and then you never get rid of them in your tank because they just take over unless you have something in there that sucks them right out of their shells and eats them, which is what the pufferfish does. It's really cool to see, actually, kind of nature work. And then I've been working with some frozen bloodworms and some frozen brine shrimp to feed her. And she seems to be doing just fine. So that's it. That's been my last, I don't know, month or so. All right, Chris, how about you, since you're going to carry us with actual gaming and tabletop stuff?
Well, I started doing Song of Ice and Fire demos on Monday evenings at the store. So it's been some gaming there. Been playing my Boltons, and one guy came down for a demo. I picked up some Baratheons, and he's been buying new stuff every week, so it's been fun. I've done any painting since the last show. I think last time we chatted, I was on a roll doing a bunch of Space Marine infantry for Legions Imperialis.
Mm-hmm.
Not managed to get much more done on that. I did manage to rebase all of my Empire army for Old World, just put on the base adapters that I designed. So they're all on the correct size bases now.
Have you tried it yet? I've yet to talk to someone who's actually tried it.
No, I've not managed to get a game yet. I had one scheduled, but life's got in the way. We've had a busy few weeks with... and then Evie's off school for spring break or whatever it is. See, I've not played it yet, but I've had it scheduled twice and had to reschedule it. So we'll see.
I want to know if it's the experience that I remember. I think the last edition of Fantasy Battles that I played was 7th edition.
It's probably closer to... it's a new game.
Right, no, I get it. But it's the same.
So, yeah, like you said, you would recognize it on the table, but it's different. Like it seems a lot more fluid with the way that movement and redressing ranks works.
Which game is that?
Warhammer Fantasy, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Bretonians.
Yeah. But you can redress ranks and still move and get and you can form marching column and stuff like that now. So if you're deeper than you are wide, you're considered to be in a marching column, so you can march at triple speed. And then
Didn't they bring Lance formation, the real Lance formation back to you?
You have one, then two, then three, then
four, five.
For your Lance, yeah. No, you've got, like I said, I haven't played a game yet, but it seems like it'd be pretty similar to what we all remember. So yeah, I'm pretty happy with that. We'll see how it goes.
So I heard tell at the store, though, that like they brought up a whole bunch of the armies back so that people could quote unquote play it, but not all of the armies are going to be supported. Is that an
So everything that previously existed has a PDF that you can play them. The current plans is for the time period that they're doing, like the vampire counts haven't come into their own yet because Vlad von Kirstein hasn't taken over Slovenia yet.
Oh, so they kind of rewind the clock a little.
Yeah, it's like 300 years before Karl Franz is born, kind of thing.
So are they back to being just the undead like they used to be?
You have Tomb Kings now. So there's no vampires. But if you want to play vampires, you can because they have a PDF.
Gotcha. I'm talking probably, what was it, 3rd edition, whenever it was just the undead. You know, we got like skeletal archers and stuff. That's whenever I started playing.
Oh, I know. I get it.
So is it just Tomb Kings for the undead, or you can still play vampire counts, but they're not...
You can play them with the free PDF.
Right, but when they say not supported, it's because the time doesn't make
they're not printing an army book because they don't exist yet.
Yeah, but all right.
If you want to download the rules, you can.
That makes more sense to me as to why they wouldn't support an army like that. Like, I get it for like the old school guys that like still had their old stuff and they still wanted to play it. Yes, we'll allow you to get, you know, you'll be able to get games in and play in the system, but it's not being supported not because they're not supporting the game. it's being they're not being supported because they're just not
in the era. I mean, like, Wizard Men are in the same. They're not getting a book, but they've if you want to play Wizard Men, there's a PDF already out for free that you can play.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know what I mean? They're not going to make new models for you. But
not right now.
Anyway. Did you want to buy new models anyway, or were you just looking to play the M you already own, in which case play the M, you know?
Exactly. I don't know. Exactly.
I mean, I'm probably biased. Like, the two armies that I kept are Empire and Goblins, so both of mine are getting books.
Yeah, and both of them are going to stick around.
But, like, I have to buy... I have to buy two steam tanks. Well, I have to buy steam tanks and a new centerpiece model because my general was Carl Franz on a dragon. It's not been born yet, so I can't use Carl Franz on a dragon. And then I can't find my steam tanks. I don't know where they've gone. I used to have two. I don't know where they are now. So I'll rebuy those, but like I'm not buying a bunch of new stuff for Empire. My goblins, I'll buy the new Mangler Squig model because the one that when I made my Mangler Squig, the model didn't exist. So it's very small and unimpressive compared to the actual model. But like, I don't think that it's not going to be a money spinner for Games Workshop. I think, I don't know. There's so many different things. I can see why people would be frustrated or upset or whatever, but yeah, you know what I mean? Play the game, have fun, and then go back to what you were going to do anyway, because I doubt this will be your main game.
That's exactly the words I was just going to say. The reason why this is being released is because of the people that still wanted to be able to play it. And God, they blew up the Fantasy Battles games a while to do Age of Sigmar. So the target audience for this is very, very niche in a very, very already niche community in the Games Workshop hobby. So I think you should be kind of like, don't get me wrong, I get it. If I was super excited to be able to play Vampire Counts again, and or Skaven, apparently Skaven are they not in it? Skaven was my army.
I don't know. I think they are.
Oh, then never mind. The hell with you.
Every race that exists is playable. They all have at least a PDF.
Playable, you know? Or complete. I'll put it. We'll use AMG terms. Are they a complete army, or are they going to be supported in getting new models? I guess it does. Like I said, it doesn't really matter. It's basically the first edition of this quote unquote game. With any luck, it'll do better. Maybe they will change their minds and start supporting different armies, storylines, things like that. So I wouldn't marry yourself to the idea that I'm not going to play that game because they're not supporting my army. I don't.
You wanted to be able to play them.
Now you can.
So I've heard from people locally that are really into the fantasy that this is the kind of like the restart, and then as time goes on, if it does catch on, they'll progress the history, so you're getting some of those, you know, down the road, not right away, of course. You know, they're giving you the ability to play, it's just not going to be every army as far as support goes.
Yeah, and then gaming-wise, I've played a bunch of X-Wing games. I haven't played much Legion. I've got a Legion game planned for tomorrow. I've been hammering the old X-Wing. It's been fun.
There is rumors that the guys during our 3-week break from the league might want to do first edition X-Wing. Someone apparently found all the stuff online for PDFs and stuff for the cards and the bases and stuff like that. And I'm like, I might be tempted to blow the dust off the old TIE fighters and pick a wave and say, okay, wave three and before, that's all we're going with. Like, it's just going to be B-wings and interceptors and TIE Storm and Biggs walks the dogs. Oh man, those were the days.
Yay. I mean, you could just play current new X-Wing and have fun there. That's what I would do.
You could. I unfortunately, the consensus around the store is I don't think a lot of people, and this is not me speaking, this is the group, aren't particularly happy with where the game is. I don't, like I said, I've not kept up enough to be happy or unhappy about it. I still have very, very fond memories of playing that game. I still support the idea. I still want it to stick around. I still want it to be around. It's just 40K has I only have room and time enough, my hobby hours, focus in one direction. And as every podcast for the last 3.5 years couldn't attest, that has been in the 40K direction. Mm-hmm. I wish I had the opportunity to open up a more wide, eclectic, oh, this is this night, and that's going to be that night. I wish I could do it, but, you know, responsibilities and adulting suck.
Yeah. No,
Sean, you're muted. You look like you made a good joke, too, and we missed it.
I said you have to work at a game store, you know, to be able to enjoy all the games.
Okay.
I mean, you're still
working. I get to enjoy more games now. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. You don't get much time to do anything, to be honest.
Well, and you guys have kids, you know.
Yeah, there's that, too. And
yeah. I feel like I've done other stuff, but I don't know.
A month's a long time to try to get trace back on what you did. I get it.
Yeah. But, no, it's been fun. Good. No complaints from me.
All right, so that's going to lead us into the main topic, and that is IP spinoff. So I've got questions about this one, but Sean, this is your topic. I'll let you lead in to kind of give us the basic premise. Maybe you'll answer my questions in your premise.
Yep. So the concept of this topic is kind of like, you know, how do you feel or you know, what experiences do you have with the spinoffs from, a good example is Star Wars. You know, it's one that we all know.
I was going to ask about that. Does this count? You
know, so you're looking at movies, you're looking at, you know, television series from the, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever, even recently, that spin off into games. So a good example that I have is you have RoboCop. So RoboCop spun off into a couple different franchises where arcade games, Commodore 64, I think it was Commodore 64, and then maybe Amiga. Not 100% sure, but I know that they spun off into a video game and then an arcade game where you had the movie, but what they ported over was basically the theme and not totally like the movie itself. Another good one is T2, the arcade game, the shooter, you know, where you're in the world, but you're not in the actual like movie setting. So conceptually, this topic is about like what's your experience or what are your thoughts on when companies get the IPs for games. And, you know, you had the, what is it, West End Games version of Star Wars RPG.
I was legitimately going to reach over and grab one of those books if we were going to go down that route.
Yeah, it's, you know, RPGs are a little bit different because you can kind of mold them to however you want to. But board games, you know, Battlestar Galactica board game, you know, use the theme and stuff. But it's that experience when you're playing it. Are you getting what you want out of it, being in that universe and playing those games? You know, we always have what you would call the non-thematic, like D&D. That's just a world that was built on, you know, a system. But it was the designers' worlds, created the worlds, and then, you know, those, you have people that just make their own. But, you know, that's kind of the concept of the topic. And, you know, Star Wars is probably the biggest one for the three of us, you know, and Warhammer, and even Warhammer.
Well, there's a couple of big ones you can almost knock out of the park right away. And those are going to be your big three, quote-unquote, sci-fi, fantasy genre. Go Star Wars, Star Trek, Lord of the Rings. Those are so easy because they've been transmuted in so many different media, whether right. they be card games, video games, board games, RPGs. Like those three alone cover the gamut, multiple different publishers over multiple different eras. You could almost hit on any one. And part of what I was hoping you were going to say was something along the lines of, you need to exclude those three. Like, you need to dig deeper than those, because those are so easy that we could talk for hours about some of our favorite Star Wars translations from X, from the West End games, Lord of the Rings, yeah. Oh my God.
So when you look at those, though, those big three, I think the one area you want to attack are card games, you know, because do the card games really give you the feel of the IP, like the actual IP? Because I know that there was this ECG for Star Wars. There's been the...
There were a couple.
Yeah.
Because Decipher had the contract, and then Wizards, I think, put one out with when they had it. And then didn't FFG do one too? Yeah, FFG did a couple.
Aren't they doing one right now?
Yeah,
ECG that's coming out now. But the card games to me are the weird ones because, you know, thematically they give you the world sort of, but they don't give you the characters or the ability to play. You know, they do give you the characters, but it's not.
It doesn't feel.
Yeah.
Like the universe.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm at with it, where I'm trying to look at games, you know, that look kind of like your Alien RPG. And
yep.
And was there an Aliens miniature game of some type?
I think there were a couple of iterations of the miniature games. I think the one you might be thinking of the most recent one was the Gale Force 9 one, the stuff that Chris had all that stuff for.
Yeah.
There was that one. There was West End Games whenever they... not West End Games. Who the heck had it? I'm looking at the book. Leading Edge Games also had a... they had pewter, quote-unquote, tin miniatures. They had a miniature battle kind of thing. It was mostly tied to the RPG, very similar to how Rogue Trader was kind of tied to the RPG, then it kind of evolved into Warhammer 40K. It was still kind of tied to it. I think I may have the book for the quote-unquote miniature side of it. Yeah. So it's gone through several iterations.
Yeah. And like with me, the big thing is like, and I go back to Star Wars because it's the easiest IP. But one of the things like I look at is like Battlestar Galactica. So Battlestar Galactica.
Hoping you were going there.
So way back when, you know, when I was a kid, Battlestar Galactica was out. The original one, what is it, like 78 or 77 to 79 or something like that. And you had the toys, but you didn't like have, I don't remember any games that were
Battlestar Galactica. Oh, they did have a board. Give me 2 seconds.
Because I remember the Star Wars board game from back then, which was another one of those weird games. Because it gave you the like theme of the movies where you're entering the Death Star and then you have to disable the tractor beam and then you have to get to the Falcon and then you have to fly. You have to do something to fly up top where then you're like blowing up the Death Star or something. It was a weird game, but I don't remember Battlestar Galactica back then.
100%. 1978, Parker Brothers put it out.
Okay.
It was one of those ones where you have like the plastic thing with a slit in the top and you put the ships in there kind of thing. So you had Vipers in it. They had a spinner instead of dice. I'm looking at it right now. You had all of your raiders that you would fight on it. It looks really, really cool.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So 1978 Parker Brothers put out, I knew they did.
But then you had the newer games, you know, where you had...
Sure.
You had the board game, which I really enjoyed. The board game is really fun if you could get the maximum amount of players to play so you could have two traders or the trader and a half ability in the game. And I know that that game has been ported to another, or that system has been ported to another game. And then I know with...
It's unfathomable. Unfathomable. Yeah.
Unfathomable. Yeah. You know, but like what... So the main topic here is just what are your experiences with IPs that come from movies, or if you go in books, probably eliminate most of that with Lord of the Rings if you don't talk about that.
Right?
You know, but that's kind of where I'm at with it. Like, so for Ed, for you, what are your experiences with IPs from movies, and what are things that you've, you know, liked and disliked about those IPs?
So, I mean, there's a couple of different angles to take it. So I'm going to pick on, I could do all the Star Wars I wanted. I feel like legitimately, if I were to pick all the games that I've attached myself mostly to over the course of my lifetime, almost all of them fall into that. Warhammer 40K probably is the only one that I feel is probably kind of its own separate category, because the game is the IP. The books kind of help support the game. The video games kind of help. They all kind of tie back to the actual board game miniature. So that one kind of goes in a reverse direction. If I think of some of the first, you know, role-playing games I ever played, that would have been Star Wars West End Games version of Star Wars. Some of my favorite video games growing up as a kid, X-Men vs. TIE Fighter. Like, I could tie Star Wars into virtually everything, but, like, almost all of, even X-Wing. I mean, we go back to X-Wing. Half the reason, probably three-quarters of the reason why I jumped into X-Wing whenever I did, because, oh, it's Star Wars, and it's miniatures, and it's cool. I'd make the argument, so if we go to the Star Wars CCG that Cypher did, where I do feel like the IP does sell it. I don't feel, oh, God, I'm all over the place in this, and so let me try to answer your question directly first. Most of those games, one of the major problems thematically and theme-wise I always had with Swing is, from a lore perspective, sometimes it didn't, especially whenever they started adding in multiple EU characters or even multiple eras. Whenever before First Order became their own faction in Swing, and you would literally be able to run Darth Vader and Kylo Ren in the same list, that always felt icky to me. Like, it didn't work. Or even whenever you would have, like, bounty hunters that would be working together on a scum list, for example, when you know those two bounty hunters in the lore absolutely hate each other, it shouldn't work, but somehow it still does. So in the end, it is a game for those with the wrapper, the paint job of the IP. But if I think back to that Star Wars Decipher video CCG, which was massively popular until they lost the IP, the following year they released another game called Wars that used almost exactly the same mechanics. They did update a couple of things, but it didn't have the Star Wars coat of paint on it, and it failed. Now, did it fail because of the changes they made? I don't think so. I mean, functionally, the game still felt the same. I feel like that game failed because it didn't have the Star Wars coat of paint on it. Which is bizarre to me, because if you think about it, if it's just the game and it's just the mechanics, you could be playing with, you know, stickmen figures drawn onto your cards. It shouldn't matter. If the game is good, it shouldn't matter what the art is, because as we can kind of establish, like, well, there is a supposed to be, like, they mechanically try to put in the look and feel of a universe into the game. In reality, it's just game mechanics, cards get used, and how they get played in a game. So there's a really big part of me that feels like, while that statement is true, sometimes that coat of paint is enough to draw that attention from that fan base to want to play it. And when that coat of paint is gone, they don't want to play it. So if Fantasy Flight Games decided tomorrow that, AMG decided tomorrow that X-Wing was a complete game, but they're going to come up with a whole new spaceship battle game, and they're going to create their own universe, would it sell as well? I don't think it would. Even if mechanically the game's exactly the same, I don't think it would sell nearly as well, because it doesn't have that coat of paint on. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, because you saw that with Attack Wing.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and that's part of, like, conceptually, you're right down the line, because that was one example that I was going to use, is why did X-Wing work and Attack Wing fail, or Dragon Wing even fail? You know, same coat of paint like you're talking about. It's the same mechanics, different coat of paint. Why are things like that failing where one is extremely successful? You know? So Chris, real quick, we'll drop the ball onto your court here, and just give us some background and things that you've played that have, you know, come from an overarching IP. But
my take on this was going to be a little bit not too different to what you guys are talking about, but kind of hitting some highs and lows for me of games that I've played. So one of the best IP games that I really enjoyed, that I thought was done really, really well, was like the XCOM board game. I think FFG did the XCOM board game.
That's a
really
The very early adopters of a game where it needed an app to play it.
Right.
On like your tablet or your laptop or whatever. And I played it. I played it with Jill. I played it with friends. And it feels really good. It feels very XCOM-like. a very stressful game to play because you're kind of on a time limit. And and I feel like there's certain companies that I think do really, really good adaptations. Like FFG were always very good at kind of putting a skin on a game, or but making it feel like, sorry, not just putting a skin on a game, I should say.
Yeah.
Making a game feel like it has that, I don't know, je ne sais quoi.
Yeah.
You know?
There's having that element. A little bit of the soul of the game is there. You feel like you're in the play.
A company is really good at it at the moment, I think, is someone like Steamforge Games. They do a lot of video game adaptations at the moment. So I've got the Horizon Zero Dawn board game. I've got Resident Evil board game. They've got a lot of games like that where not only are they like really nice miniatures, like the Monster Hunter game has got all of the cool monsters from a Monster Hunter game, all like really nice sculpts, so you can use them for D&D, use them for anything kind of thing. But the game also makes you, they take the core elements of that IP and then kind of enfold it into the mechanics of the game. And FFG used to do a lot of, I think they, kind of, you know, maybe pass the torch to Steamforge doing more of them. But those are some good ones. I'm trying to think of some bad game, like some weaker, shall we say. I don't really know. I think part of it is with that IP kind of IP driven games. Generally, if you don't really like the IP, you're not going to buy it. And if you do like the IP, you're predisposed to liking it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to give my victim story on something like that. Whenever you're finished, I definitely have a story that ties to, I was a really, really big fan of an IP, so I really, really wanted to like the game. And I...
Yeah. Fire away, man.
Fire away.
So on the same, we're going to kind of take a step back on the Battlestar Galactica one. I was a gigantic fan of Ronald D. Moore's reimagining of the Battlestar Galactica. I was a bit too young to have the level of nostalgia for Battlestar Galactica whenever it came out. It came out in 78. I was born in 78. So I do remember as a kid kind of the sound that the Vipers used to make on the TV show. But I never... I've watched it since as an adult. And, I mean, it kind of has that same look and feel of, like, the kind of campiness that the original series of Star Trek kind of had to me in a way. But I was a gigantic fan of the series, and about into their fourth season, I think it was, God, I don't even remember the name of the company that did it, but they did a CCG for it. And I was already a big fan of CCGs at the time. I was really big into Magic at the time and thought, this is a home run, right? I love the IP. This is going to be a winner. It was massively popular at the time. Battlestar Galactica was massively popular at the time. So I thought this was going to be a winner. I was going to get on the ground floor on a really popular CCG. It didn't last past its first because the game and the mechanics were hard. It was one of those, it wasn't a good game at all. Did it have the Battlestar Galactica coat of paint on it? Sure. So much so, I mean, for those of you that were fans of that show, like all the paper, for whatever reason, in that universe had the squared off corners.
Right.
So even the cards themselves from the game, like it felt like you were holding a piece of that universe when you played the cards. Because the cards even had the squared up corners. Like, they'd gone to that level of detail. The art was all screenshots from the TV show, so it wasn't even, like, drawn artwork. It was, you know, like, the way that we used to like the old cards from X-Wing whenever they did, like, the screen movie shot stills. It was all of that. So it kind of had that feel of, like, ooh, you're trying to beat out the Cylons. There was a political angle you could do. You can do it from a military angle. You can do it from a strategic angle. There's different ways to win the game. But ultimately, in the end, it was just bad game. And as much as I wanted to like that game, I just couldn't. And clearly nobody else did either.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, because I bought into a game, the Conan game.
Ooh, there you go. There's another one.
So Conan, I really like the IP of Conan is really cool, because once again, I grew up with it, with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I get the issues people have with the scantily clad women and all of that, you know, today. But
today, yes, at the time, it was really cool.
It just, it felt like that world, you know, could exist within our past. And so I went, you know, all in on the Conan, that's the board game. And it was very disappointing, you know, because it had decent models. But then when you start to really look at the models, it's like, it didn't impress me like I was hoping it would, in the way that I felt that it was portrayed in the Kickstarter campaign. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, maybe if I play it more, you know, maybe if I can get it on the table more, get the minis out.
Don't do it, Sean. That's always the trap. Oh, I know. Maybe if I play this game and I don't enjoy as much as all the other games that I play but I don't have time for, I'll like it more. But weirdly, whenever I do have the time, I play the games that I like. Because you don't have enough time to play the games you like. So any game that maybe if I had more time to play it more, I'd like it, is never going to be a game you'll play.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
I say, as a person who has boxes of games just in this corner over here, literal cardboard boxes that I don't play, that I kept because, you know, they're good. There's nothing inherently wrong with the game.
Yeah, I mean, I have a 6x6 Kallax full with everything piled on top, too. You know, a good game, I thought... because I can never remember. So I have the Mage Knight Star Trek version of it. Because they made the different skins. And I have the Star Trek version of Mage Knight. And I really, like, I know a lot of people don't like Mage Knight for whatever reason, and I get it. But I really, really enjoyed the Star Trek version. Problem with that, of course, is just getting it on the table. You know, finding people that want to play it. And, you know, can enjoy it. I also have the World of Warcraft board game. It's actually not mine. It's my friend Matt's. But that's one of those games, too, that is an enjoyable game to play if you have, like, a weekend to play, you know, because it's a big game. It's a big box fantasy flight game. And if you play with the expansions, it removes the turn limit and changes how the game is played completely. From a turn standpoint, and you know, so that's one of those types of games where the IP crossed over semi well. You know, it did a pretty good job. So in your experience, what's a game non-Star Wars, the ones we talked about? What's a game that you thought did a really good job of crossing that line and making it from the movie or whatever IP it comes from, and kind of is one of those things where you would play as much as you could if you had the time and ability in non-40K. Because 40K is too
big. All right, so I've got one off the top of my head. It is interesting because, all right, this is probably a little bit TMI, but I don't care that much. My kids always ask me what topic we're talking about tonight kind of thing. And I was talking to my oldest daughter about tonight's topic. She goes, oh, I know the first game off the top of my head that I think did a really good job of crossing over from a TV show into a game. I'm like, oh, well, which one's yours? And she goes, well, The Walking Dead Telltale series. For she loves it. But she's a big fan of the comic. And the Telltale series for The Walking Dead, on, like, you can get the complete collection for the PlayStation 4 that has all the seasons, follows the comic book story, TV story. Which is one of the reasons why she was attracted to it in the first place. But it's really good. I've played it too. I'm not nearly as far into the game as she is. She spent way more time into it than I have. But I've watched her play it because, I mean, you're watching someone play a comic book. Legitimately, you're just watching the story. But I think that's what's great about it. I mean, it's not really a game per se. Like, yeah, you should have to make some decisions. Yes, there's some quick time events. But really what you're watching kind of a visual novel through the course of the story that goes through that. And
I played the Batman, or the first part of the Batman Telltale, but apparently, right, from what I gather, the Batman one's one of the weaker. I think we spoke about this in the past, actually. Did you not play another Telltale one? A werewolfy thing, maybe?
I didn't play the werewolf one yet. I think I have that one. I have not touched that one. We probably were talking about the Walking Dead one. But I mean, when she said that, I mean, that was a bell going off in my head. Like, yeah, that is a really good crossover Because it feels like you're in the universe. It feels like you're kind of watching the TV show. Especially with the art style that they went with, that Telltale went with for that particular one, with the comic book drawings of how they did the character, you feel like you're reading the comics. You're just reading a different story that you haven't read before. So I really felt like that one kind of has the whole package that really put you into that universe, that feel.
Well, I've got what might be a good one, depending on if Ed can answer the questions or not, Sean. So I'm going to go entirely against the rules that you just set for your own topic.
Perfect.
But so Magic have done the IP decks, haven't they?
Yeah.
So I think that the 40K IP is a very lazy. It's just renaming cards into your commander decks, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what I gather for a 40K one.
Exactly, because they actually have other real card equivalents too. Like Saint Celestine is another card. Don't get me wrong. Do I want to go out and buy all of them just because the others are in there? Yes.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That just feels like a lazy use of the IP. That is just slapping a skin on your game.
Legitimately putting the code of
paint. Equally, I believe that the Dungeons & Dragons set that they did has like a mini game within the game where you can progress through dungeons and stuff. I don't know if it's good. I've never played it.
It actually is.
You know,
it's an interesting mechanic that they added to the game. I did play in that set.
Yeah, it's not bad. Definitely not bad.
Especially with Magic, they're really kind of limited to them. Like, there's only so many things that they can do and still be able to be the game that it.
No, that's what I mean. I get it. Like, say, if you wanted to play a 40K card game, like Conquest was pretty good.
Yeah,
I thought so. Yeah, Conquest.
But if you're going to play Magic, probably play Magic, don't you?
Yeah,
because
play the Magic theme of Magic. Yeah. So I don't want to stop this, but you know, one thing I do want to ask is IP adjacent. So games that either are based on an IP, but not really that IP, but you can, like you already talked about, where it has that feel, or you want it to have that feel. And a good one for me is Dead of Winter. So Dead of Winter, even though I think it was maybe made before Walking Dead or at the beginning of Walking Dead, it kind of is one of those zombie games or... You know, it's not, I don't call it fully a zombie game. It's like that hidden traitor mechanic that's in it. What's a game that's like that you've played?
I've got one for you, Sean, that you'll, Ed will like and you'll appreciate. Why would you buy a Conan game when HeroQuest exists?
True. That's a good point.
You stole mine, but for very different reasons. Because what I was going to say is why would you pay D&D when HeroQuest exists? That's like legitimately where I was going with the adjacent game. So I appreciate that we both came to the same place just from different avenues.
Yeah, I mean, what's the center art piece of HeroQuest is just Conan.
It's just Conan, exactly.
Yeah.
Quite blatantly, oh, what's that? There's some evil sorcerer dude behind him and he's got his big sword. Oh, man. Well, weird. We've
never seen that imagery before. Does that mean you're going to make me pick a different game then?
No. So I do have a game that I theoretically don't believe I should own anymore. So Modiphius published a game called Block Wars, which I'm going to quickly run and grab it. But it's fine, don't worry.
I know he can still hear us. I'm struggling. Like, HeroQuest was an easy one for me because, I mean, it is so very close to D&D. The only other one that I can think of, that's a struggle.
Sorry, Brick Wars.
Brick Wars.
By Modiphius. If you can see the pictures here. What do those guys look like? Yeah.
They're not Lego guys at all.
No, definitely not. Not like, you can't just take a Barbie and a Barbie Lego in a car as one of you in your army. And there aren't rules for if you want to field your knights against the space people.
Oh my god.
You can have your zombie hippie dude with flowers. He's got points.
Oh,
if you want
that's actually a really cool idea.
Yeah, you take your X-Wings against your pirate ships. Mm-hmm. So I immediately bought this game because I was still doing ordering for the store at the time. So I only ordered two copies of it initially, and one was for me. Then I ordered a couple more, but by the time I was ready for my third restock, which was about a week in, I got the email saying that they wanted to do a recall on all of it because he got sued by Lego.
Imagine that.
Imagine that.
Yeah. So
someday that book might be really valuable.
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep it and play.
But yeah, you have lots of Legos. That's
a failed IP game.
Yeah. Is it a failed IP when they get sued? Well, sorry,
IP adjacent. Well, you know, if you'd have gone that step further than adjacent, you probably would have got away with it.
Yeah, probably. It reminds me of the Last Unicorns printing of the Dune RPG. It's one of those games, like, in my adult life, someday I'm going to own that book. They only printed enough copies to sell it. I think it was at the 96 Gen Con. And they printed the books with the role-playing rules and all of this stuff prior to getting the contract signed with the family that owns the estate, and they pulled the contract. So those books that they printed that sold at Gen Con are the only ones that have ever sold because they pulled them, and then the Last Unicorn Games went under directly after that because they got sued into oblivion. So if you ever see one, it's Dune Chronicles of the Imperium. It's a white cover, big sandworm on the cover. If you ever see one of those in the wild, those are really, really hard to find, and they tend to be really, really expensive.
Someday, there's that many Dune books now, or Dune licensed games, that we probably could have just waited.
They could have, but at the time, I don't think that the family of the estate particularly cared for. Because I think they were trying to, like, I get what Last Unicorn Games was trying to do. They were trying to meet a printing deadline. They wanted to get to Gen Con. They wanted to sell a lot of stuff. That's how they're going to name for the game out. And they kind of made an unsafe business decision in making the assumption that they were going to get the contract signed. And when they didn't, they had to pull them out. So, yeah, it's one of those really hard to find. I think I have a PDF of it floating around somewhere, but I it's one of those unicorn things for me. It's like one of those holy grail things for me. Someday I will physically have my hands on that book and own it. Apparently it was a terrible RPG, by the way. Apparently for those people who I know that have played it with like PDF copies and stuff, apparently it's not very good, but I just want to own it because I know the story behind that book.
So I do have a stupid one, which very much feels like it was a game that they had that they were just waiting for an IP to put on it. But FFG do a game called Hand of the King based on the Game of Thrones IP. And it's like stupid fun art, very cartoony. And you play as, you take turns, you make a grid pattern of all of the different characters, and they've all got their high shields on them. And then you have Varys moving around, and he can move horizontally or vertically. And you collect cards as you're going. And the idea is you are trying to get all of the Martells or all of Baratheons and complete sets. And it's very, very good. It's very clever. It's really interesting. It's got like, when you complete a set, you can pick like a power-up card where you might have, I don't know, Jaqen H'ghar, so you get to kill someone else's character and swap places with another character and stuff like that. It's really well done, but it feels very much like it was just a game, and like it's missing something. And then Game of Thrones, you know what I mean? It's one of those chicken and the egg things. What did Game of Thrones come with? We need some silly party game to make for this game, for this IP, or we've got this silly party game, but I need something to push it over so I can sell it. That's a really good one, I think.
Munchkin. I had to sit here and think about this whenever it came down to like IP adjacent games. I don't know if anyone's ever played it. It's a silly
game.
They
have all different versions of it too.
They do now.
It's not even adjacent anymore, is it?
It's not even anymore. But when it first came out, it was 100% an adjacent game. Like, do recognize their expansions. They've gone into it. They've gotten quote-unquote official licensing, so they're kind of part of the universe now. I get that. But when it first came out, it was definitely a D&D adjacent game, and it was fun. It was a simple enough game that my kids could pick it up and play it and have fun with it. I have, I think, two or three of the expansions here for it. That was a good one. Because that was almost kind of in the same respect of like what Chris was saying. Probably not so much, but it's like they had the game mechanics and they could have been anything, but they decided to go with the not quite D&D, and it works so well for that game. It's so much
fun. Yeah, and it's a good spoof of it too.
It is.
Because I think the original Munchkin was designed as a, I think they all are really, but they're designed as a spoof of, you know, that type of game. You know, another game that I find that's kind of adjacent to like the Munsters or Addams Family is Gloom. Mm. If you've ever played Gloom.
Yeah.
It is such a cool game, just the way the mechanics, you know, the clear cards and putting cards on top of cards, and it's great, great mechanical game that's kind of that, you know, I don't know, the Munsters or the horror theme, you know, like Dracula theme or however you want to put it, that IP out there. Gloom's really good for an adjacent game. Mm-hmm. One series of games, I don't know if they're, I know that they're not adjacent, but they're within a world, and the world is so vast, but it's like your Arkham Horror games, you know, because that world to me is just, it's not just, you know, what you get out of those games. I mean, if you read the books and stuff, it's a lot deeper than just the old gods and all of that. It's a game, or it's a game setting that's actually pretty cool, and you can do a lot with it. I think, I'm trying to think of what the game is called. It's the one where you're trapped, I think it is. It's a Fantasy Flight game, and it's a dice roller game. I can't remember what it was.
Eldritch? Elder Sign.
Yeah, Elder Sign. I think that's a really good way to represent and play that game.
Hmm.
So my last question in this topic is, There's two pieces to it. So, do you have a IP Holy Grail game that can fit pretty much any IP, but you know, a game that you either have, don't have, or a game that would be that one game that you would want out of any game that's out there? For me, and I'll start this, mine is Space Hulk, and I got a second edition version of Space Hulk, and it is such a cool game to me. That's kind of like was my introduction into 40K world was Space Hulk. And I had played it years ago on, I think it was either a Commodore or an Amiga, and just really liked that intensity feel that you're up against the Gene Stealers, and, you know, every mission is different, and it's not like 40K games like you play now. It's small unit, you might have three people in a scenario. But when I found that game, I never knew it was a board game until I found it at a con, and I got it for like $20 off, you know. It was, but that to me was that, and of course Dark Tower, you know, because Dark Tower is the original one, not the new one that I have now, but the original one is just an amazing game. But Space Hulk was pretty much my Holy Grail game for the longest time.
I will say, Sean, if you can get the newest copy of Space Hulk you can get, because it did actually just get better with each reprinting. There might be a slight dip, I think, in the cardboard quality for the tiles from one reprint to the next, but I think they also added extra rules, and so it's not really that big of a deal.
Yeah,
but the newest versions of Space Hulk are really good, and the miniature quality is so much above and beyond the old first and second edition.
Okay,
that's by the by, obviously. And yeah. Then, in answer to your actual question, I have a rather obvious one. You know, set X-Wing. You know, pretty good. It's made many a pretender, you know, no one's quite got there.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree 100%. When it comes to, in my opinion, 40K is always going to be the top dog, but when it comes down to a game that at least competed with a giant, at least for a time, and for a time was the game to be playing on the tabletop, yeah, I agree. X-Wing's got a very, very, it occupies a big section of my heart for how much I love that game.
And then I will, just because of the way I initially understood your question, I understood it to be something I don't have. And that would be, so I own Chaos in the Old World, which is a really old FFG Games Workshop IP set in the old fantasy world, where you play as one of the four Chaos Gods. And it's like it plays really, really well at four players. You playable at three, but not playable at two. But they did the Horned Rat expansion, which added in the Skaven god, the Horned Rat, and I never managed to get that. So I have Chaos in the Old World in pristine condition, but I don't have the Horned Rat expansion for it. And every once in a while, I'll go and see, and I always find the Horned Rat expansion with the game. I'm like, I'm not buying it again. I'm not paying like $300 to buy the whole thing again.
Right.
But yeah, I always, that's the one, that's my white whale I'll keep chasing. Every once in a while, I'll have a look online, see what I can find, see if I can find a Shadow, not Shadow of the Horned Rat. That's a good IP game.
There you go.
But yeah, the Horned Rat expansion for Chaos in the Old World is the game that I would want.
Well, I think I gave half of your question away already. I've already talked about it. While I was sitting here, I dug up the PDF. But my white whale, my holy grail of a game I want and do not own, simply because of the history, simply because I'm a big fan of the universe, is going to be that Doom Chronicles the role playing game. For all the reasons I explained earlier. But if I were talking about how did you word this question? I want to make sure I answer it correct. It was the perfect game for you, the one that's like the one that you want.
It's your holy grail of all games.
It's always going to be some iteration of Dungeons & Dragons point something, whether it's 3.0, 3.5, start getting into first edition Pathfinder. To me, that's always going to be a game like I could pick it up today and be comfortable with it.
One of these days, I'm going to make one of the two of you run one of these shitty old editions of D&D, sit down and play it with you until you go, oh man, yeah, you're right, I'm not having as much fun as my thought.
Well, all right. So for me, I spent so much of my childhood and my early adult life playing Dungeons & Dragons. Second edition has a special place in my heart. Always will. The one that I know, I played a lot when I was younger, but when I got into, when third edition came out, I wasn't even married yet. I was a young 20-something, early 20-something, and I was playing D&D every single weekend, DMing with the RPGA, playing in RPGA modules, or even when we weren't doing those, playing at home. Like, that game and that game system, I could pick it up tomorrow. Quick read through of the rule book that's sitting right there at my fingertips or right behind me. For those right behind me, I could pick it up in a moment. And
there is no such thing as a quick read through of the rules of first or second edition.
First or second edition, agreed. Third edition, it's a little bit easier.
Yeah.
but yeah. So like, for example, like one of the things that we're debating on, there are 3 to 4 week break between leagues, is someone wanted to do a quick session of something D&D role. And when we were talking about introducing people to the games, like even the guys that I play with at the game store are like, well, yeah, no, fifth edition's kind of cool. And I know that's kind of the big thing, but I remember doing this, and this is what, and all of them, all the guys that I play with upstairs, all point back to third edition being their favorite.
Really?
Well, they're younger. Like, we're a little bit younger, and I get it, Sean. I get it. I wish I had been there for first edition. I had been there in the heyday of second edition. By the time I started getting into second edition, I had 2 years of second edition, and then we crossed over into third when I was really getting into D&D.
So before Sean goes on an angry diatribe, I do have one tangential question to ask, because there was what direction this show could have gone in, which I'd also kind of prepped a little bit for in my head, which we kind of veered entirely away from. So I know, Sean, you said you were kind of, that was the last question you wanted to ask on the topic.
Right.
Right. And I feel like we've got a little bit of runtime left, so if you don't mind.
No, no, by all means.
So, take it away.
We've spoken about IPs, but in generally the way we've looked at it is like movie and video game IP going into physical, like board games, RPGs, card games. What about video games? And what, like, so I'll give you an example of what I think is one of my favorite IPs that has gone into a video game. N64.
Oh, okay. So, you're not going to steal mine.
No, N64. I think you can't. There is no better wrestling game than WCW versus NWO on the N64.
Oh, that is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Because you had the stuff on the PlayStation where it was the WWF licensed stuff. But that was always more trying to be closer to an actual fighting game where you had like proper moves to do and proper like things you had to learn. For N64, it was all just, let's say, video sports entertainment.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
All of the moves were, didn't matter what character you were, this button did this power move for all of them. And it was all done off your hype and stamina bar. You know, and you get the chance going, you'd get your taunts to get the crowd going so you could pull off your power moves and your finishes.
Yeah, that's a good choice. That's a good
So for me in wrestling, that's a good one. But my nostalgia, if we're going to go wrestling here, it's the Technos Japan or Taito in America, Matt Mania.
I thought you were going back to the NES, like they did what, pro wrestling, or they did, and they did.
I mean, for
the
if NES. You want to go pure nostalgia, I'll give you the WrestleMania.
That's one.
WrestleMania,
yeah, that's
game
one.
Was it? The one that was on the four player console, yeah. Not console,
arcade.
A four player arcade. The original blue machine with the golden trim.
A friend of mine loves to play that. He kills me all the time playing it because, you know, we can play it without you're not worried about putting quarters in. But yeah, it's but
with Fred DiBiase, you know, get your $1 million title matches. It's fine. Yeah.
I've got one that was for me was a perfect crossover from a board/tabletop game into a video game, and this is where I thought you were going to go. So I'm glad you didn't take it, Dawn of War. The original Dawn of War RTS strategy game. Oh my god.
So I'm glad you went that way rather than something, because Dawn of War didn't feel like it was trying to be Warhammer. It didn't feel like it was trying to be 40K. It felt like it was trying to make a good game in the 40K universe.
Yeah, 100%. It does not play like, it's not the equivalent of playing on the tabletop. Games
something like I mentioned it earlier, Shadow of the Horn Rat. So there was Warhammer, Shadow of the Horn Rat, and Dark Omen, and they still were real-time strategy games, but they felt like all of your pieces, like when my unit of Grudgebringer cavalry charged, they rolled to hit. Every model in that front rank rolls to hit, and it's all simulated. Obviously you don't see any of the numbers, but the engine of the game was simulating playing Warhammer. Whereas in Dawn of War, wasn't that.
Dawn of War was Command and Conquer, like with a 40K skin kind of over it. Your resources regathering is a little bit different, but for all
it was one of the early adopters of control points, wasn't it?
Yes, correct. Yeah. That would have been my
game. Company of Heroes, I think, were pretty early in that kind of design space.
Correct. But like I said, for me, that would have been, that's my good crossover from one the other direction, where like I could play whenever I finally got the expansion to be able to play Necron,
I thought you were gonna go Alien versus Predator on the PC, not the Atari or the Jaguar, but on the first PC version from late 90s.
I'm trying not to. All right, I have 100% love for that, because if I'd have got the other one, I was debating picking. It was not necessarily Alien versus Predator. Good game, great game. Really did enjoy it. Especially Alien versus Predator 2 was really, really good for a first person shooter. But for the feel for the and I think I've not hidden this in any way, shape, or form.
It's gonna say Alien Isolation, folks. Don't worry.
I'm gonna say Alien Isolation because if I have a gun to my head on which of the two movies of the two great movies from that franchise, Alien or Aliens, I like the most. I like the Alien one because it's more horror, and you know, Aliens is more, you know, 80s action. Both good, love them both. Gun to my head, I'm gonna pick Alien. And if I have to follow that line of suit, Alien Isolation really did pick up that feel. It's still one of my favorite games of all time. It definitely gave you that claustrophobic feel, that scary feeling of like, I don't know where the alien is. He can drop down any time. He can kill me at any time. And there's nothing I can do. I can't kill the alien. The most I can do is chase it away for a moment or hide. That game is perfect in the way that it, I mean, there's not 9.5 out of 10. There are certain things I would change about the game, but from its ability to be able to put you into that universe, that dirty, used future feel that the first movie did, replicates it almost perfectly. It replicates the fear, the suspense, and it's such a good game. For those who haven't played it, it's such a good game.
So for me, it's BattleTech, the Crescent Hawks Inception. So the BattleTech games, so this one was released in 89, and it's kind of like an RPG style game, played on the C64. That's where I played it, but it was on the Amiga, PC, MS-DOS. I think, yeah, Atari ST, Apple II were probably the other ones where you had a lot of people playing it. But it was basically a lore version of BattleTech. You know, you played as a character, and the goal was to find a weapons cache. That was the entire goal of the whole game. But in the meantime, while you're trying to find it, you could find mechs, get in mechs, get teams of mechs, fight other mechs, you know. So that was kind of like my introduction to that BattleTech mech warrior world for me in the BattleTech game. And it's a game that I got to find the ROM for my Amiga, my cheat Amiga machine that I have, but to me, it's probably one of those crossovers from the BattleTech world back then into video games for me, was that one. The other one was stupid, but it's Ghostbusters. It's the old Ghostbusters video game.
Transfer from driving the car top down, and then you've got to line up the beams to throw the trap back. So bad, Sean.
It's a horrible game. But I can tell you, I got so, so many hours on that game.
You mentioned maybe not this, but not that particular game. Like, Gabe and I had this conversation a couple of weeks ago about some of the games that, like, he remembers for the rest of his life. The Ghostbusters game on the Wii was one of the first ones that he played from beginning to end and actually beat it. But if you played that game in any way, shape, or form, it's basically Ghostbusters. Because they never could get the movie made. It has all the original cast, including Bill Murray. It's the story that Dan Aykroyd wanted to tell for the third movie, and since they couldn't do it, they basically did it in a video game form. It's so good. It's a really good game. But I get it for having that Ghostbusters. That's another good IP crossover that went from one way to the other.
Yeah. So then I do have some tongue-in-cheek entries in the vein Sean mentioned of IP adjacent. So, you know, a game like StarCraft.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah.
So it's pretty IP adjacent to 40K, if you think about it.
I mean, yeah, you know, yeah.
What about Warcraft? That could be IP adjacent to Warhammer. Uh-huh. You can say.
It almost if they started making that game with the intent to do it in a particular IP and then got told no. So like, all right, screw it. We're just going to make our own. Yeah, it's almost like that happened.
Yeah,
that is a good. I'm surprised I didn't think about that one. That is a good. That's a good call.
Yeah, and I have Myth 2. That's kind of adjacent. I don't know if you guys ever played that, but it's kind of like a strategy real time game where there's battles and all kinds of stuff. We did it. We played it where it was skinned out. Trying to think. I think it was Myth that we played, not Myth 2, but. Somebody, you had the ability to put skins on your characters, and we would do World War II skins. So, like the dwarves and stuff, you know, you would reskin them to World War II And you had like Grenadiers and you know, basically taking the different character types and turning them into that. And we'd have online battles like crazy playing that game.
Yep, I could see that.
That was a Bungie game. Let's see.
So, anything else you want to touch on? I feel like I kind of had a couple up there that I felt were worth talking about. Didn't deserve its own show.
Yeah, no, I think you definitely put a nice little cherry on top of that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, I just kind of wanted a little bit lighter topic, you know, because I think that, you know, we talk about games and we talk about things like that, but we never really dwell too heavily, not very often, on the IPs that games come from, you know. Star Wars, of course, is, you know, where we got our start as a group, you know, together. But I just think there's so much in this world of gaming that, like, for me, and I'm kind of at a disadvantage to the two of you, because my gaming was heavy as a kid, heavy in the military, got out of the military, and then died off for about 17 years of marriage, with some dabbling back into it, you know, with the PS1, PS2, Xbox as the kids got older, but it was mostly the kids playing those games, not me. And then getting back into gaming, you know, post-marriage and, you know, really diving into it. But also, I missed out on a lot of the gaming, like console and computer gaming that you guys have the experience with, you know.
I'm living that with a PS3. I completely missed that entire generation.
Well, the good thing for you, Sean, is that you played the Star Wars game that was just the lines with the lines, TIE Fighters, and you had to shoot down the shots before they hit you, and then you go in the trench.
Those are the vector games.
Which is basically every Star Wars game since.
Yeah,
right.
Just looking better.
Yeah, I was going to say, just with a different skin.
Yeah, I really, really like Super Star Wars. I appreciate that if you then play Rogue Squadron as your first version of that game, it's still the same game. Because you just fly. Super Empire Strikes Back is the same game as Rogue Squadron for the first level.
Right.
It's just got better graphics. So,
yeah.
I've got one since Chris got to put his little tongue-in-cheek one. I've got one. Best IP that has yet to have a game that is worthy of. I'll put it that way. Almost all these IPs out there are probably, they are probably a game out there based on it, but doesn't have a good game to make it worth it. And I'll throw mine out. I still feel like there isn't a good Firefly. They did Weiss and Hickman did an RPG.
There's been a bunch of Firefly games.
Are they any good then?
Oh, I can tell you which one sells the best, but I don't know if that...
The big Firefly board game is a weird one because it's kind of like not playing with anybody.
Licenses for it.
I have Firefly somewhere on my shelves.
Yeah, but is that any good?
I've never played it, so I don't know.
I have on my shelf. I actually have an autographed copy from Weiss and Hickman of whenever they tried to release the first RPG for it, and. I mean, it's cool. It provides some interesting, cool stuff for the background of the game, but it's not a good game. And it's one of those IPs that I'm really surprised there wasn't a good game for. And I get it. It's been so long since I recognize that it's a cult classic. Those 13 episodes are sacred to some of us. They really are. But others,
I'll commit the sin and admit I knew nothing about it until I saw Serenity.
Well, and admittedly, I never saw it live on TV, and a lot of people didn't, hence the reason why it got canceled. I didn't pick up on it until the DVD release. And then I remember someone talking to me about it at work one day, going, oh, I can't believe you haven't seen the show, go out and get it. And I remember buying the DVD box set for it and have never turned back. But it's an IP, I enjoy it. It's a really cool, very unique IP. And I'm like, oh, there's going to be a good game. Oh, come on.
I mean,
Space Wild West.
Okay, right. You know what?
It has laser guns. Like, you've got
When the producers say, can you make me a sci-fi series with lasers and spaceships, and you deliver a Western that doesn't have any lasers, I feel like it's a Josh Whedon problem.
It might have been. But it's one of those things, I think, that outgrows the art, not the artist kind of thing. Like, and because he's never going back. He said it on multiple occasions. He's never going back to it in any way, shape, or form. It's so beloved to me. It's so unique, so different, so cool, that I really wish there was some sort of game that kind of encompassed that look and feel, and I've yet to find one. If there's one out there, someone send me a message, someone respond, so that this is, yep, if you're, because how many times did Greg tell us, oh yeah, if you want to do Firefly, just Traveler. Well, yeah, you can. Traveler's one of those generic ones. You can kind of force feed anything into that game. GURPS, you can do any of those other generic
roleplay. I do have, just because we were on a tongue-in-cheek stuff, I do have another one for you. Sure. I've got a really, really good IP-adjacent game for you.
Ooh,
so you, there's a really, really good popular game that's IP-adjacent to Dune. It's called Warhammer.
Yeah, all right, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. But how about the original question?
This little Warhammer 40,000 game, I don't know if you've heard of it. It's pretty IP-adjacent to Dune.
Pretty adjacent, you know, Imperium. Yeah, I can see that.
Oh man, got Emperor Dune. Sorry, what?
Yeah, what? Never heard that before. Don't know where that came from. But Games Workshop never borrowed anything, I swear. Fingers crossed.
Oh, but no, we never borrowed anything.
Not a thing. Like,
I've got another small little game that's IP adjacent to one of the ones we mentioned previously as well. Right. So Defenders of the Ancient is obviously based in the engine for Warcraft. And then there's a little IP adjacent game next to that called League of Legends. Definitely didn't just steal any of that. Don't worry about it.
Didn't steal any of it. Not one bit.
No, it's great. Don't worry about it. Oh, dear. Okay.
Do you have any of those IPs that you wish were good games and you don't have one yet?
Not really. Like, a good example of why I say not really is because I thought that I'd really enjoy, like, Shatterpoint feels like something I should really enjoy. I've just not had time, don't care. Marvel Crisis Protocol feels like something I should really enjoy. Marvel Champions, I really, really enjoy playing Arkham Horror LCG. I should really enjoy playing Marvel Champions. I just don't care. Mm-hmm. I own it. I've got the core set and my Captain America deck, and that's all I've bought.
So that's
Arkham kind of Horror, I buy all of them.
Yeah, the Champions, but I have the core set and maybe like one or two decks.
Yeah, and it's a good game. It's great. There's nothing wrong with it. But
yeah, but it's not compelling.
It's not that, Sean. It's like for me. Said, I just, like, if I, why would I play that if I could play Arkham Horror?
Right. Yeah,
I enjoy Arkham slightly more, so why would I waste time playing the game I enjoy slightly less? You know, yeah. I have a group who I play Arkham with, it's the same group that I would play Marvel with. So occasionally, we play Marvel when someone external to that group wants to play, we'll play. But yeah.
Given the options, that's where you're going to go.
Yeah. So I'm sure at some point, like when X-Wing dies and goes away, something will probably take up the time that I would use playing X-Wing. Whatever game that is will clear up space. Like, assuming one of the games I already play gets promoted, then something else will move up to that slot, maybe. But
yeah,
no, I don't feel like there's a hole in my gaming life. I would love to play more. I would love to have an RPG that I'm playing again at the moment, but I equally don't miss a commitment. So
running it, yeah, I agree.
And not even like, even just playing it, like just that weekly. Like if you're playing something every week, even as a player, that's a commitment. So right. At the moment, my life is Monday night. I'm running demos for Song of Ice and Fire until at least the end of April. Tuesdays I work. Every other Wednesday I'm playing Arkham. Every Thursday I'm recording. Friday night's X-Wing night. Saturday night I'm doing the recording with you guys that we missed on Thursday. you know what I mean? Like, my week's pretty full and I don't feel like I'm getting a lot done or accomplished. There was no painting time in there. Spending time with a wife and children, doing fun things that isn't necessarily playing a board game or a miniatures game. So yeah, I've got a lot on the plate already. I don't feel like there's something that I'm missing. I miss playing 9th edition 40k Crusade. So my group kind of splintered, and none of us have really taken to 10th edition. The weird thing is I don't miss playing 40k. I miss doing stuff with that group on a Saturday or a Sunday. But like I said, I haven't pushed it because my time's taken up doing a bunch of other stuff. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
that makes sense. Yep. How about you? I'm sorry. I thought you were.
No, I was going to throw it to you, Ed. Like, what would you cut to make time for something new? If there was something missing in it and that thing arrived, I feel like we're on to another show topic here. But
yeah, I think we are. That's a hard question to answer in the next 10 to 15 minutes. So why don't we hold that one? Because maybe that's your next topic. What would you cut for that one? I did kind of want to hear what Sean's response was and see if there was any IPs that he wished had a good game that he could get into that doesn't exist.
Oh, that's a good question. Let me think here real quick. An IP that I wish had a good game. You know, I've kind of been spoiled my whole life, you know, because there are so many good IPs out there. I don't know. That's one I would absolutely have to think on, because maybe Planet of the Apes.
Ooh,
I'm not talking about any of the new movies.
You're talking the old classic. I'm talking about
the old classic first five movies based on the first book, you know, that spun off and everything. But Planet of the Apes, and you do kind of have that, because Gamma World could be set within Planet of the Apes time.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I feel like that's cheating with Traveler. Yes, Firefly could be set in the surrounding universe.
But an actual Planet of the Apes with good historical points to it, you know.
Fill in some of those gaps in the lore and the fluff.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I like the Alien RPG, because it does that. A lot of that is filling in some of the gaps.
Yeah, and I mean, there are things out there, you know, I'm sure that there's, you know, lore and you know, how the fan base creates the metaverses for everything. But, you know, ultimately, I think Planet of the Apes would be my dream one, just because I think the original IP, as cheesy as the movies are, the IP is solid.
Yeah, the premise behind it is really good.
Yeah.
It's kind of a victim of its time frame in which the movies were actually produced.
Yeah.
You almost kind of wish it was done maybe a decade later. So that it was a little bit more advanced with the look and feel of it. I'm kind of with you, the more modern ones, there's a new one about ready to come out. I don't know how excited.
They've tried to recreate the old, you know.
They're all prequels to the first Planet of the Apes. They don't reboot anything. It just tells different stories within the same universe.
Yeah, with some, you know, it's like a multiverse version of the universe, I think. Mm. You know, because if you go back to Wahlberg's, the first remake or first one that they did with Wahlberg, you know, you could feel Planet of the Apes in it, but you couldn't. You couldn't feel that original 1968-69 world in it.
Not enough flagrant racism for you, no.
Exactly.
Get your damn hands off me.
Yeah. You damn dirty ape. Yeah.
Oh, fun times. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's just...
product of its time.
Yeah, you know, but I think, you know, and of course you, with the exception of one movie, you had Roddy McDowell in four of them, you know.
Without those movies, I don't know how Andy Serkis stays in business. How he stays, he keeps feeds his kids.
yeah. But I think that's my IP that I would love to see something happen. That's a good one.
I wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah, I just think there's something missing. Like I said, you can recreate it. You know, if you played Gamma World, like my Gamma World setting is always, it's not Planet of the Apes, but it's the concept of Planet of the Apes. Where when you start in mine, you're astronauts from our time today and get sucked into the time warp and move into the future. where then you're in the Gamble World world with the skills that you have today, so that you would know that picking up a stop sign and somehow attaching a leather strap to it would be a shield. You know, makes common sense. If you're in the Gamble World world, though, and you're playing characters from that time, that would be mind-blowing to that type of character. So, yeah, I think that's mine.
That's a good one. All right, is there anything else you want to cover, or is this going to, like, the short topic that ran for 2 hours?
Yeah, the short topic. Actually, my last two have been 2 hours, I think, each
one. Yeah, but they were good ones. This is
good topic. I try.
I mean, remember, we know a three-hour show isn't unheard of. And we could have been done in an hour and 20 minutes, I think, before I asked the extension question.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't think we're doing too badly.
No, I don't think we're doing too bad at all.
No, nope, nope. So, yeah, that's all I got.
All right, then that is going to do it for this one. I do appreciate everyone tuning in. I do want to make sure that we get to, of course, promoting the show and where to find everything. So that is going to be all found in one single location, and that is going to be Dice8. That is where you will find Patreon to help support the show and help support Chris. That's how you're going to be able to join the Discord. You're also going to be able to find the YouTube channels, the Instagrams, the Twitters, all of those fun things. Oh, and the Facebook. Totally forgot about that. And let's not forget, Chris has his store that's also available there as well. Whole bunch of cool stuff that you're there, from basing, miniatures. You've got a whole bunch of the, what am I thinking, the Tufts, the green and alien Tufts, all of that stuff. And many, many things more. Anything else I need to cover there?
No, I think we're good.
Good. All right. So I do appreciate it. And of course, as always, guys, we will see you in on the next one. And until next time, I cash.
Thanks for listening to a Lack of Focus podcast, brought to you by Dice8 Productions.